Browns losing to the Philadelphia Eagles yesterday. 20-16 was the final score. Again, Browns fans are angry. Browns fans are getting angry about facts. I said yesterday in the Browns postgame show, it's a game, you know, Browns had a chance to win the game. Somebody called in, how can you possibly say the Browns had a chance to win the game? Did you not watch the game? Something like that. It was a four-point game. And all they had to do is get a stop and get the ball and maybe go score. Right? You had a chance to win the game. It's a four-point game. You had a chance. Yet, they didn't. You have a quarterback who was not good in the first half. You have an offense that has not scored more than 18 points. You have a team that hasn't scored more than 18 points in a game this year. You have an offense that in six games has scored seven touchdowns. Three on the opening drives. Think about that. Four touchdowns by the offense this year in something other than the opening drives. Dano, it's miserable.
Your quarterback hasn't thrown for over 200 yards in any given game.
All season.
Mm-hmm. They're dreadful. I'm sorry. I would love to give you more analysis. I just don't know how much is there. This offense is repugnant. It's unwatchable.
It's a good word.
It's horrid. Like, it hurts your football-loving soul to watch. It's not even an offense that you look at and say, oh, it's setting football back. No, it's not even a football offense. It is so horrid. There's no other way to put it. And the problem that we're going to be in the midst of is the fact that everybody has one person that they hate, one thing they agree on, and one thing they don't. That's where we are right now. The one thing we hate and we can all agree on is the fact that the offensive line is playing poorly, and I don't think it's going to get a whole hell of a lot better in a short period of time.
No, and it keeps getting beat up.
Yep. It is sounding like Nick Harris is probably going to be done for the year. Again, Kevin Stefanski going to be speaking at 12:30. That is not official yet, but it does not sound optimistic for Nick Harris. Okay, so now your second string center is down. Ethan Posick was out this week. I think he's on IR. Did they move to IR?
I don't believe so.
I don't believe so either. But he doesn't sound too good. You had Michael Dunn playing center.
And he did a very commendable job.
He did.
I mean, all the talk about the change in the offensive line coach, hard to think I've held off on this. Hard to think it hasn't had an impact. But I can't blame everything on an offensive line coach. There have been injuries. Maybe the line has become old. You've had guys come in and out.
Undersized.
All I know is this, and let's go big picture here.
Yeah.
Okay? The team has not scored, well, here are the points by games. 17, 18, 15, 16, 13, 16. They're averaging just under 16 points a game. And that's with the defense and special teams scoring touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
The offense has scored seven touchdowns. That's big picture.
It is one of the worst offenses I have ever watched in my life.
You're 1-5.
It looks like, and it's not getting better. That's the thing that is the most concerning.
Well,
this has not gotten better.
No, it hasn't.
It hasn't clicked more. There's no relationship that's built between quarterback and wide receiver. And you can scream the drops or something to it. Fine. I think everybody's at fault, folks. I know everybody's going to yell about Watson and say that it's his fault. Yeah, he's got some of the blame in this. The line is horrid.
Without question.
The receivers are dropping stuff. And we finally found some semblance of a run game. And the play calling has been shaky at best. And I think maybe to some of you are going to take that and think that that's not harsh enough. Because after the whole Cedric Tillman, Jameis Winston play call that got everybody all hot in a biscuit, like...
Yeah, but guess what?
It's been shaky.
Right. If it worked, it's a different narrative. I didn't like the play call. You bring Jameis in, you know it's going to be something, either a sneak or something weird. I don't know. Let's go really big picture here, okay?
Okay.
We talked about the need for change before the Eagles game.
Right.
Well, now if you don't change... If you don't make changes now, well, then there's really something silly going on. Okay. There's if you don't make changes now, there's really something silly going on. The first change that I think needs to be made. No, it's not all his fault. How do you change things most easily with an offense? You change the quarterback.
Yep.
Jameis Winston needs to play against Cincinnati.
I agree with you.
He needs to start.
I agree with
against
you.
Against Cincinnati.
I agree with you. The quarterback, I've always...
And not that Jameis is the answer, but Deshaun has not been good. I mean, let's just face it. He's not been good.
Somebody once told me that a franchise quarterback is the deodorant of an offense. And by that, I mean is a franchise quarterback comes in and could clean up all of the ugliness that's in front of him and could clean up the smell and make it better. That's what it was always been compared to by me is that, you know, those great quarterbacks can step in and, hey, the offensive line's a little shaky. Okay, I'll get the ball out faster. We'll work around that. I'll slide protections with my eyes, all of that kind of stuff. Hey, the receivers are a little bit hairy. Okay, let me make sure I've got the ball on target. We're figuring this out. That's how it's always been described to me. And I've always thought that that made a lot of sense when it came to franchise quarterback. That's not here. And I don't know if it's because of Watson's inability to be the deodorant of that offense or this offense is too stinky for deodorant. I don't know. But, boy, I want to see somebody else in there.
They need to play Jameis Winston. They need to start him. And they need to put Deshaun on the bench. Sorry. That's just the way this is.
Agreed.
I know everything else involving the quarterback. At some point, you lose complete credibility with the team and your fan base if you don't make a move. The second, if you're not going to change quarterbacks, you must change offensive coordinator. Last year, with a different offensive coordinator, this looked better. If you're not, and I don't think that that's the move to make. I think the move to make is quarterback. If you're not going to change the quarterback, well, then you must change the offensive coordinator or the play caller. Those are the moves to make. 1, 2, 3, and I say play caller third because Kevin has shown us that he's a good play caller. That's happened in the past. We've seen it. We saw it last year with Deshaun Watson. And the fourth move to make, which I couldn't disagree with more, would be if someone were to say change the head coach. Kevin's, I think, a fine NFL head coach. He has shown that. Is he perfect? No. Very few guys are.
None of them are.
There are four options of things that can change. And I would not change head coach. I think that's silly. I wouldn't change play caller, but I could understand it. I could change offensive coordinator, and I would definitely change quarterback. I'm sorry. If not, and Dan, we talked about this big picture-wise last week. There's a reason that they're playing Deshaun Watson and playing him to the detriment of everybody else on the team right now. And I has he been the only problem? No, not at all. However, whoever's making the call that he's got to be the guy out there needs to be open-minded about what's going on here. If it's ownership that's insisting that you play this guy, well, how do you like 1-5? If it's the deep thinkers in the front office, well, are you going to take the hit or are you going to allow your head coach to take the hit if this doesn't work? And if it's the head coach and he fears for his job, somebody needs to tell him you're not going to lose your job if you make a change at quarterback. I hate to say it because we all so want it to work out. At the very least, put him on the bench, give Jameis the start. Not that Jameis is the answer to anything, but he's your next best option. He's the next guy up. And see if it doesn't fix anything. And if it does, then let Deshaun sit and watch. You got to pay him. You don't have to play him.
Let me back up your thought here with a great tweet that was sent out by Mitchell Schwartz, the former.
Oh, I read this one.
The former right tackle.
I read this one.
The Browns won a Super Bowl with the Colts, right?
Chiefs. Saw the
Chiefs. Thank you. Saw the tweet that Zach Jackson set out saying Stefanski asked if he will stick with Deshaun Watson. Answer being yes. Mitchell Schwartz. It's incredibly, we'll say, cruddy to do this to the rest of the team. Joel Bitonio is out there every week playing through who knows what and has to wreck his body when they have no chance of being good because of the quarterback. Miles Garrett is playing in pain every week. Feel for everyone else there. That's a dude who has blocked for a lot of really crummy quarterbacks.
And And some pretty good ones.
And some, and exactly.
One in particular.
One who's going to the Hall of Fame. But that's a guy who's been in that locker room. That is a guy who understands.
That's a guy who knows what he's looking at.
Exactly. And again, it's not all on Watson. Please don't call up and start screaming at us about that. But it's a lot easier to change one guy than it is to swap out five guys.
And that's the point.
And the five guys you put in, there is no way in hell are better than the five guys that are out there.
That's the point. I'm not blaming Deshaun Watson.
He has some of the blame.
Well, sure he does, but not all. I'm not blaming but I'm not blaming him. It's not all on him. But is he playing well? No.
No.
What's the easiest move to make here to try and get a different look and a different outcome? It's changed the quarterback, and the time has come. Sorry, the time is here. It's time to start Jameis Winston at quarterback. It's not all Deshaun Watson's fault. The offense can't score. What are you going to do? You're going to fire everybody? You're going to fire the coaching staff? You're going to change offensive linemen? You don't have enough to change. You do have another quarterback sitting there. He's thrown for a lot of yards. He's played quarterback in the NFL. The one we're playing now is not very effective. It's time to have everybody in the organization realize that if you want to try to win some football games, Deshaun may not be the answer right now. Maybe he will be again. Right now, he's not helping you win football games. He's not the sole reason you're losing, Dan, but he's not helping you win.
The offense is grotesque. It's unwatchable. They don't move the ball forward. They're one of the worst third down teams we have ever seen. What was the stat going into halftime?
They were 0 for 26 on third downs, I believe it was.
I mean,
yes,
come on.
It was 0 for 26 on their last third downs, and then they picked one up. Pierre Strong got it.
Yeah. I mean, come on. No team in that game entered the red zone until the fourth quarter. Lane Johnson called their offense constipated. I don't think I could say a word on the air if that's constipated. I don't know what I could say on the air to talk about the Browns offense.
We want to hear from you, folks.
I mean, what do you even do with this? This thing is broken.
You try to make some changes. I mean, the time of sticking with it and working through, you're 1-5.
Yeah.
If you lose, Dan, four more games, you're done. If you lose four more games, you don't have a chance to finish 500 this year.
If you lose three more games, you're on the bubble.
If you lose three more games, you might not make the playoffs. Some team at 9-8 will probably make the playoffs this year. So if you lose three, if you lose four, forget it. You're toast.
You've got the AFC North ahead of you, which is looking good. You've got a whole lot of other big boy games in front of you as well, including those Kansas City Chiefs coming to town.
You have to fix it. Or try to fix it now. Greg is in North Canton. Hello, Greg.
Hi, Greg.
Okay. First of all, none of this is shocking. This was the front office making a major error. The fact is, this team was 11-6 last year and won five games in the final 90 seconds. You could have easily gone 6-11. So some of those wins were great for sports talk openers, but they masked the fact that for 58 minutes you could have lost the other game. So what do? You roll the same team back out, and you go try to sign three backup quarterbacks. You know, so it's not any different. This team got lucky a lot last year. They're like walk-off wins. You can't live like that. But no one ever wants to bring that up because they were winning. Now that you're losing, it's a big deal.
Well, Greg, it's the reason why they're over-under where it was in Vegas, because they look at one-score games and they look at, you know, turnover luck and fumble luck and all of that kind of stuff and wager that in. I mean, that's what played into this whole thing. So you're right. You're right.
Yeah, so, you know, you have to look at the front office. You know, think of it this way. What the Guardians did about a year and a half ago when they were a game out of first and they traded Savali, Josh Bell, because they knew that it wasn't sustainable, that they were not going to survive moving forward with Aaron Savali in the rotation or Josh Bell, that they were going to eventually tank going back last year, just like the Miami Marlins did. When you only you don't look at the big picture in analytics, and when you pick and choose, this is what happens. You got to look at the broad spectrum of things in a holistic approach and say, wait a second, this is not going to happen. What if Darnell Mooney catches that ball in Chicago that bounced off his chest? What if Jake Moody doesn't miss that field goal? You're 9-8. Or Kareem Hunt in that touchdowns than whether or not he crossed the line or not.
All right, Greg, thank you. Woulda, shoulda, coulda. I get it. That happens for every team in the league. They won 11 games last year.
Yeah, you had a lot of right bounces. I agree with everything the man said.
Jim's in Parma. Jim.
That's the problem.
Yeah, listen, I am not calling to complain because I got to believe you guys are pretty sick of that. I am calling because...
That's what we're here for, man. Jim, so if you want to get it out, you're more than welcome, sir.
Jim, thank you for understanding, though.
I'm calling because I am totally convinced that we have a bad team and there's no sense crying about it anymore. But I do disagree with you, Jeff.
Yes.
I wonder who will be here next year, Jameis Winston or DTR? And should we start DTR over Jameis Winston, let him have a go at it, and start grooming him for our quarterback?
Jim, let me give you a thought on that, and I understand it. As long as you still have a mathematical chance of making the playoffs, and nobody drive off the road, please, when I say that. You still have a mathematical chance. You're not going to play DTR. You're going to play Deshaun, or you're going to play Jameis. And personally, I would like to see it be Jameis. If you get to the point, Jim, where mathematically you have no chance to make the playoffs, and you think DTR might be your guy, I buy your thought completely.
Well, thank you. I called in last week to your afternoon guy, and I posed a question to him. If Deshaun Watson was on any other team, would he be starting right now? And I was told yes, because of the current contract conditions. Well, I'm sorry, but does money count more to the Browns than the quality of the team for the fans?
Jim, you know what I think the deal is here? And Jim, thank you for the phone call.
Not only the fans, but the 52 other guys on our roster.
Well, that's critical. I think the thing is this. Somebody, you tell me where it falls. Somebody in the organization has to admit they made a mistake. Now, is Deshaun Watson here because ownership said, go get him?
Yeah.
Is he here because Paul DePodesta said, we need to get this guy?
Yeah.
Is he here because Andrew Berry said, I want this guy?
Yeah.
Is he here because Kevin Stefanski said, this is the quarterback I want? I would say the least likely of those scenarios was the last one I said, which is Kevin Stefanski. That's usually not a head coach call.
No.
Bringing in a guy like Deshaun Watson, to me, and the way they had to bring him in, complete ownership call.
That's what it feels
because
like.
They have to sign the check. And somebody now in the organization has to be willing to say, okay, this isn't working. We have to pay him regardless. Whether we play him or not, we're paying him. But he's not helping us win games right now. Maybe somebody else can. And I honestly, I think it would be, and it again, he's not been awful.
Oh, he has been awful.
No, Dan, he's had some. Yesterday in the second half, he was okay. What he's been is anything but a top-tier quarterback, anything but a second-tier quarterback. And that's not what you're paying him for. You're paying him to be the man. You're paying him to be an absolute beast at quarterback, and he's not being that. So, and obviously, statistically, the numbers show that he's not played well. But he's not the only reason that he's not played well. That's why I'm not going to say awful, because the rest of the offense is all discombobulated. Can a change at quarterback change all that? Maybe, and I want to find out.
He's been awful, and everything around him has been awful, and nobody has lifted anyone else to the level it needs to be.
That's fair.
And that's why I'll say awful.
That's fair.
Because no one has lifted anyone else. Jeff, you could pull up numbers right now of success rate, which are outstanding ways to look at offensive production. He's being compared to Jamarcus Russell. Like, come on. We're at Jamarcus Russell level of quarterback incompetence. We're at Blaine Gabbert level of quarterback incompetence.
Jackson Menor. Hello, Jack.
They've all been awful.
Yeah, awful's the key word. You can keep repeating that, but it doesn't matter now because, look, I'm sure Kevin Stefanski, if he had the authority, Watson would be on the bench. He doesn't have the authority. Andrew Berry has the authority.
Jack, you get that, right? You get that. The coach, the coach has no choice here.
Yes. No, he doesn't. And that feeds back into the offense. They don't have confidence in the quarterback. They had confidence in the quarterback last year. It looked to me like, you know, a winning situation. Well, okay, so now we have a quarterback that can't play, that probably can't win another game, and Jimmy Haslam is nowhere to be found. I don't think he'd walk out on the field and risk being hit with more than one beer bottle. Unfortunately, that's the way it is.
Jack, thank you very much.
Please don't hit people with beer bottles.
Don't throw stuff out of the stands.
Please do not throw blunt objects at any human being.
Don't do that. Read the analysis. 5 takeaways from another disheartening loss by our buddy Scott Petrak, who joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Scott, you sum it up pretty well. The Browns were better Sunday in the 2016 loss in Philadelphia. It's not enough, not even close. And then you make more great points. They were better yesterday. And you still lost a football game that I think you had every chance to win.
Yeah, I think that's the state of this organization right now, Jeff. It's not even close to being good enough. When you see slight improvements, the run game was better. You get a huge play from Myles Garrett and Rodney McLeod on that block field goal for a touchdown. It's still not enough, and there's still major issues that they have not been able to address or fix and not be able to overcome. And most of those are a quarterback and on offense.
So, Scott, if you were the head coach of this team, what do you do first?
Yeah, go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, okay, that's a tough question there, fellas.
Man, if you want, I mean, I could go, how's the weather? How's your golf game? You're putting okay? You know, we could go that route if you want. It's more entertaining, probably more uplifting.
It is more uplifting. I had a good round last week.
Hey, on ya.
But it's raining, so that's depressing, too. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, if it were only about beating the Bengals and trying to save this season, then it's go to Jameis Winston. I think this offense and Deshaun Watson has reached the point where that would be the best move. You know, they're searching for this elusive spark, and that's where you have a chance to find it, is by switching quarterbacks, especially when the one you're playing is just not been good enough. I understand why they're not going to Jameis Winston. And if you're not going to do that, then I don't know. I thought establishing the run game yesterday was important and a good step. If you're trying to, you know, figure out another way to do it, they ran it 25 times. They ran for 100 yards. First time this season they hit 100 yards. You know, you could get Nick Chubb back this week, which would help, and it takes pressure off Deshaun Watson and takes pressure off the offensive line. But even if that happens, you're still lacking those explosive plays. You're lacking your quarterback getting the ball out in time and seeing the field well enough and making critical plays in the red zone. All the things that keep the Browns from scoring on a weekly basis. So I don't think there's any really quick fix out there. The only option would be to change quarterbacks, and they seem like they're not going to do that.
Scott, I agree with you. At the beginning of the show, that's what I laid out. It's like, okay, you have some things you can do here. And the clear, obvious one, even though I don't think everything is Deshaun Watson's fault, is change the quarterback and give it a different look. If Kevin Stefanski from above was given the okay to make a change at quarterback, would he? As a head coach, do you think?
I think he would. I think he would. Now, it's a complicated issue because
it sure is.
It's not just about this game.
No.
And it's not. It might not even be about this season. I mean, they owe him. Forget the cash, right? I mean, they owe him $46 million the next 2 years. It's the $73 million cap hit in each of the next 2 years.
Bingo.
That is going to handcuff this franchise. So you need to give. So I don't think it's the wrong philosophy to say we need to give, if you're the Browns, you need to give this guy every chance to succeed. Like, that makes sense to me, and because you're tied to him for 2 years, and if at some point you say it's sunk cost and you have to get rid of him and you have to cut him, you're really setting your franchise back, and it would make it really difficult to win with somebody else as your quarterback and not the guy you're paying that's costing you, you know, $73 million against the salary cap. So I get it. I get keeping him in there. I get all the resources that this organization has given to get Watson and then to try to support him. I mean, they made coaching changes in the offseason to try to get the most out of Deshaun Watson. It's all the decisions since 2022 have been about succeeding with Deshaun Watson. And, you know, I get that these six games have been awful, but it's still only six games. You can say if you're Jimmy Haslam or Paul D. Podesta or Andrew Berry that you got to give it longer, and I understand that, but that's not helping you beat the Bengals. So to answer your question, yeah, if it were up to Kevin Stefanski, if you get one quarterback to win a game on Sunday, I would think it would be Jameis Winston, but he's part of this organization that is down the Deshaun Watson road and does not feel like they're ready to abandon that road and say it's, you know, it's over. And until they're ready to say it's over, I think you're going to get a lot of Deshaun Watson.
Scott Petrak, Chronicle-Telegram, joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Well, Scott, the other side of that, too, is then, I mean, you're kind of teetering on the knife's edge, because at what point does then the locker room turn on you, yep, going, hey, we're not winning and we're not doing anything really that different, at least when it comes to personnel. Is that something that needs to be feared?
Yeah, I think that's a legitimate point. And, you know, I mean, they could make incremental improvements that turn into wins. I'm not saying you can't possibly win a game with Deshaun Watson. They won one this year. You know, the offensive line should get better with Jack Conklin and Jed Wills. But the biggest problem to me is that quarterback. And I think you may raise a legitimate point about the locker room, because I think the guys know that that would be the easiest fix. So I haven't gotten a sense inside there up until, you know, through last week that that was the case. You know, guys publicly are saying the right things about Watson. But that, I think that certainly is a worry and something that is fair to ask Kevin Stefanski about, for sure.
And you'll be doing that at 12:30, and we'll have that press conference right here. I have a hard time looking at anything else on the offense and coming up with any kind of judgment that I'm comfortable with based on Deshaun's play, based on the offensive line injuries. You know, I'd like to say the wide receivers aren't doing the job for him, except is that on the quarterback or is that on the line or is that on the wide receivers? I just think until something gets solidified here, you're not even able to judge it properly, are you, Scott?
No, I think that's a great point, Jeff, and you can point to little things. Amari Cooper probably should catch a third down shallow cross early in the game yesterday, and that would extend the drive. It wasn't a great throw. It was high, and it was an easy throw. It was short, but he probably should make that catch. You know, David Njoku catches a ball in the flat, and maybe if he's completely healthy, he breaks that one tackle and beats the guy and picks up a first down. He doesn't look 100%. He's fighting the ankle and the knee. You know, so that you can point to all these little examples. But the quarterback is at the heart of all of those. And I think you're right. There haven't been enough opportunities for any of these playmakers to make any kind of conclusion. Jerry Jeudy included, Elijah Moore. Like, there's just not enough plays on offense because they're not converting any third downs. There's not enough shots down the field. There's not enough anything to evaluate these guys. I think you're right. And it does come back to the quarterback, who needs to see the field better, who needs to make quicker decisions and better decisions. And the line hasn't been good. It hasn't been good enough. But Watson is also responsible for a lot of these sacks that he's taking and these pressures. And that's why I think it's so frustrating for everybody else on the offense. I would assume it's frustrating for everybody else on the offense, because I think you can look at some things your quarterback's not doing, guys that are open that he's not throwing to, and going, that's how the game can change, and the quarterback's not changing the game.
Scott, to the defensive side of the ball, it seems like this defense is playing decently enough that it should be winning these games. Do you think that there's elements of improvements that need to take place on this defense, or is it really in good enough shape that if the offense were to just keep it up a little bit, or at least bring it up a little bit higher, they could be winning these games?
I think the defense has played average to slightly above average this season, which is not nearly good enough when your offense can't score 20 points. And I think it's disappointing given the number one ranking from a year ago, everybody coming back, and the high expectations in year two under Jim Schwartz, I thought the defense had a chance to be dominant, and it has not been dominant this season, maybe with the exception of that Jacksonville win in week two. The corners haven't played as well as they have in the past, and Martin Emerson Jr. is the obvious example. He's given up a touchdown the last 2 weeks. I think he struggled pretty much throughout the season. I also think he's been being put in tough spots. And, you know, Schwartz loves to attack, and he loves to play man coverage. That puts a lot of pressure on those guys on the back end. And you need your pass rush to get home often and sooner. And I think that's been an issue. The pass rush, I think the stats are fine, and even the pressure rate is fine. But it feels like in key moments and, you know, the game-changing plays, they haven't gotten the pressure that they need to get. Or, you know, you flash back to that Washington game. You know, JOK has a chance at two sacks, misses Jane Daniels, and those turn into two huge plays. It's those kind of plays that are sinking the defense. And you look at the 45-yard touchdown to Devontae Smith yesterday. They catch the Browns in man-to-man. Greg Newsom's trying to trail him, and there's a traffic in the middle, and he can't. And it's an easy touchdown for them. And the only counter to that is that they can get pressure right off the bat, and they don't. So, you know, I think this defense has a chance to be really, really good, but it has not gotten there yet. And, they're on the field a ton. Your offense is putting you in tough spots. It does affect how you view every part of this team.
Scott, any chance that by the time Kevin speaks to the media on Wednesday, that ownership, Paul DePodesta, Andrew Berry, Kevin Stefanski have sat down and have exhaled and said, all right, we've got to try a different quarterback?
Yeah, I think there's a chance. I wouldn't expect it. But I would not rule it out. You know, they're looking at the same things we're looking at. I have not felt any momentum in that direction. I think the organization doesn't feel like it's there yet to do something quote unquote drastic. But I wouldn't rule out, but I'll tell you this, Jeff, what feels to me like more of a breaking point would be they come back from this 3-game road trip. They play Cincinnati on Sunday and Watson gets booed off the field and the Haslams listen to that and watch that. And maybe there's empty seats and that could be a moment where they go, okay, this is as bad as it's going to be, and we don't want to live like this. That feels like something that could happen. I'm not saying it will happen. Maybe they beat the Bengals. But if it goes bad again, the Jameis Winston chance start on the first series, maybe that has the kind of impact that changes things.
Scott, thank you, buddy. We'll listen for you during Kevin's press conference.
Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys.
Scott Petrak joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Clearly, the offense isn't working, okay? You can point fingers. You can say anything you want. Clearly, the offense isn't working. Clearly, the quarterback is not playing as well as you wanted him to play when you made the big deal for him and gave him the big contract. In most every situation, where's the logical place to start if you're going to make a change, if you're going to try and improve things? It's quarterback if you think you have an option that could do the job. And I think the Browns do. And that's why, at this point, the change that I think you should try to start with, let's see Jameis Winston against the Bengals. Do I think that'll happen? No, I don't.
I agree with you completely. It is easier to change one position than it is to change five positions. It is easier to change one position than to try to remove all of the wide receivers and find other wide receivers. It's the easiest, least overhaul thing that could take place in a short period of time.
The offensive coordinator has been here for 6 games. Obviously, it hasn't worked. You make that move? I don't know.
I mean, the problem is whomever you're going to bring in here at OC, especially with the fact that the OC is not calling the plays, it's not like all of a sudden you're going to get rid of that guy and a brand new offense is going to show up magically the next day. Well, like it doesn't work like that.
You wouldn't think so. No.
It doesn't work like that. So I think you kind of have to go your direction, Jeff. You got to go put Jameis in there and see what this thing looks like.
Stefanski's press conference coming up at 12:30. We'll hear it right here. Brian's in Florida. Brian, what part of the state?
I am up in Jacksonville. I was actually at our only victory this year. So
well, congratulations.
Congratulations.
We're happy for you.
Yeah, I've been a Watson defender. So as far as emotions and all of this, I feel like the data backs it up. One interesting thing I wanted to mention is now we're to the point where he started six games in 2022, six games in 2023, and six games in 2024. And if you look at the stats, whether it's the completion percentage, the yards per game, the touchdowns versus interceptions, his stats are remarkably similar going back all 3 years and comparing them. So any fall off that's attributed to a coordinator or even a line, I think the common denominator is Deshaun. And second to that, even if you go back to 2022, Jacoby Brissett was not mobile. He got sacked 24 times in 11 starts, Watson 20 and 6 starts. And then, you know, same with last year. Flacco was sacked 8 times, not a mobile guy, in 5 or 6 games. And Watson doubled him up at 17 sacks last year. So there's a common denominator here where I'm not defending the line, but holding the ball in the way that he operates and processes, it makes it remarkably worse.
And Brian, that was the MO in Houston as well. He got sacked a lot.
Right. We're to the point now, guys, where I think the one problem here is I feel like we're being gaslit. We're being told that, no, we just need to execute. Cleveland fans are not stupid. Like,
no, they're not.
We've been through, we've seen this before. Going back to 99, in fact, we're experts at looking at quarterback play and identifying. And I think we're all being frustrated here because we see it with our eyes. And like I said, 3 years, six games each year, same exact statistics. How much more of this do we need to continue before we draw conclusions and just move on? So that's my question.
Brian, thank you very much. It's going to take somebody, and don't ask me who. We can assume ownership, because again, you don't bring in a guy like Deshaun with what it took to get him here unless ownership signs off on the deal or insists on the deal, one or the other. And if they insisted on it, fine. I thought you were getting a Pro Bowl quarterback. It just hasn't worked out that way. And so I think that decision has to come from above, because those are the folks we would assume who allowed the move to happen. And at the time, you thought you were getting an upgrade. And it doesn't look like you've picked up an upgrade.
The other side of it, too, is it's not like, and you talk about a sample size. We've got a Deshaun Watson sample size. We have a very big Kevin Stefanski sample size. If there is one thing we could say with certainty when it comes to Kevin Stefanski, he is not going to walk out to the podium and address the media today and go, "My quarterback stinks. I don't know what to tell you. He sucks. Can't read a defense. He holds onto the ball too long. Any questions?" Like, it's not going to happen. That's not Kevin Stefanski. Kevin Stefanski could come out. He's going to say that this is on me. We got to get it fixed. We got to get corrected. We got to work on the penalties. Deshaun, it's going to be the Kevin Stefanski press conference we would hear if they won is the same one that we would hear if they lose. And you love that out of that guy as a consistent message. But, folks, you're not going to have him walk out onto the podium and go, "My quarterback stinks. I don't know what to tell you."
No, you're not going to hear that. Aunt Bev is with us. Hello, Bev.
How are you, Aunt Bev?
Good morning, gentlemen. I am not on the Deshaun Watson train. And people talking about, you know, the young quarterbacks that are doing well. I would ask you one question. What is the difference? The difference is coaching. Who on our coaching staff would you say is doing a good job?
Well, right now, nobody.
You know, so.
But these are the same folks in most instances that coached you to 11-6 last year, Beth.
I'll say this. Seems like there's enough water and towels all over the place for everybody, so they're doing well.
Wow.
Okay, who? Because Jim Schwartz, our defense was terrible on the road, and someone even said, a player said, that his defense doesn't travel, but, you know, I can understand some mistakes, but it seems like we aren't even doing the elementary things correct.
In offensively, Bev, I agree with you completely. Different offensive line coach, different running backs coach, different offensive coordinator. I get that. Defensive side of the ball, you brought back the team pretty much as was. You made a couple of additions. Clearly, they will tell you, I would agree, nobody's doing a great job coaching right now. Nobody's doing a great job playing right now.
So then, was Bill Callahan that important? Because Kevin did hire him, And secondly, on the field, what player has made a great play for our quarterback, to get a spark? Who has made a great play this year on offense?
Bev, that's a real valid question.
Yeah, so part one of that question, there's a lot of theories being flown around. One of them is the Bill Callahan effect. Like, yes, when you have one of the best offensive line coaches ever, there's always a step back that's going to take place no matter who you bring in. The other theory that's being thrown about is by going to a straight drop back, your offensive linemen are too small for the style of offense that you're trying to play with Deshaun Watson.
Which, by the way, if you look at them, makes you laugh.
That's another theory that's being thrown about, that going from, you know, the old Shanahan system, Kubiak system, and all that stuff, where guys that were a little bit smaller and a little bit quicker, and maybe it's just square peg, round hole with the offensive line. Again, that's another theory that's being thrown about.
And the quarterback holding onto the football too long.
Exactly. So three, quarterback holding onto the ball too long.
I can't tell you of anybody who's made great plays on offense to help out the quarterback. I also can't point to the quarterback making great plays to help out anybody on offense.
Yeah, I mean, he has about one to two throws a game that you're like, damn, that was a nice throw.
A heck of a throw.
Yeah, he's got one to two of them a game.
Scott is in Cambridge, Ohio. Hello, Scott.
How are you, Scott?
I'm better. You know, it is what it is, right?
It is 1-5.
It's 1-5, and it's disgusting. And, you know, I've thought about 100 different scenarios while I've been on wait, but I keep going back to day one of Mr. Haslam coming on the scene. And literally told us all, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to strive to bring a winner to Cleveland, and I'm going to do everything I can do in my power to get it right. And from that point on, they were one and done, 2 years and done. I'm floating this and doing this. Who is being held responsible right now in the front office? Is it going to happen? Is this the year that they fire Andrew Berry for the decision? Someone.
Scott, let me throw this one at you.
Sure.
One issue that I had early on in the Haslam ownership was, and you just said they're going to try everything they can, was the lack of continuity. And they have shown continuity with this front office and with this head coach. And I think it's paid off. It's not paying off now. I think it paid off last year. I think it's paid off over the run that Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry have had together. It's certainly not working now, but I do appreciate the continuity because I do think the head coach is a good head coach. If Kevin were to be let go tomorrow, he would be a head coach in the NFL next year. I really believe that. And if Andrew Berry were let go tomorrow, he would at the very least be somebody's assistant GM until another opportunity came along.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll go to the point to where everyone is talking. Do you bench him? Do you bring a spark to the team? You're 1-5. And someone's decision is going to pay at the end of the year. And I play him. I don't care that he doesn't throw for 200 yards. I play him. Unless he has an injury, I play him, and I do everything in my power to try to win a game. If he's the Kubiak offense, if he's running someone else's offense, he's stubborn, won't give up a play calling. Okay, I get that. We don't know what's going on behind closed doors. We don't know what's going on and shuffling down through. But do something. You have 3rd and 2, and you run a sweep when you have a different quarterback come in and you don't push the pile. You had 2 downs to get a 1st down.
And Scott, to the guy who's not exactly known for being fleet of foot, that's the problem that I had with that play call. Why are you handing it to Cedric Tillman?
Elijah Moore seemed like a more logical guy there, didn't he?
Jalen Darden would seem like a more logical guy that you could hand that to. Or, even Amari Cooper seems like a more logical guy that you could turn around and hand that to.
Or leave Deshaun in the game and run a play. A lot of different things you could have done.
I don't even hate the play call, man. I hate the fact that they handed it to Cedric Tillman, of all people.
Zach is in Cleveland. It's a Browns Therapy Monday, Zach. Let her rip.
How are you, Zach?
Yeah, this team should be 0-6. We beat the only other 1-5 team, right? I mean, I think actually there might be one or two other 1-5 teams, but this team sucks, dude. They're awful. Statistic-wise, through 6 games, they're worse than either the 1-15 or the 0-16 team. I mean, they're putting a team out there that looks like, for one, that none of these guys want to play for Deshaun. I mean, I saw guys dipping their heads yesterday too. It's rough. They got to make a change, and like Jeff said, they won't. They can't. And at this point, what do we have to win? So why make the switch? I mean, I'm talking myself out of it almost.
Right.
While I'm on the phone with you guys, what's the point? Let him play it out. And I guess the plus side of him playing it out, there's two plus sides to it, right? If he plays it out, we go 1-15. Awesome, we get the number one pick. If he plays it out and he actually does good, maybe he's a trade piece. Maybe we can trade that contract next year. I guess let him play. Screw it. We have nothing to win for. I mean, there's no way. We're not going to play playoffs, guys. It's over. I mean, we have a better chance of winning the World Series as the Guardians this year than the Browns do even trying to sneak into the playoffs. Let's be realistic. And with that being said, go Guards. Beat them Yankees.
There you go, baby.
All right, Zach. According to NFL.com, no 1-5 team has ever gone on to win the Super Bowl. No stunner.
No.
But three teams who were 1-5 did make the playoffs.
Okay.
I've caught grief for just stating numbers.
What? Yeah.
And you know, to me, the numbers say if you win 8 of your final 11 games and go 9-8, you might have a chance to make the playoffs.
People are taking your statistical facts and thinking that they are your statistical opinions.
Which is not the case at all.
No, they are statistical facts.
Do I think the Browns make the playoffs? No, of course not.
There you go. As I said, the truth.
Would I like them to? Absolutely. But you're 1-5. I mean, it's not... It's so unlikely you make the playoffs at this point at 1-5, it's ridiculous. But folks, we deal with two things here, opinion and fact. And fact is, if you go 8-3 in your last 11 games, which, you know, we've seen the team play, you wouldn't think so, but you never know.
Highly unlikely.
Exactly. I would agree with that.
Highly
but
unlikely.
But if you do win 8 of your final 11 games, you go 9-8 and you have a chance. So that's my only point with the stats there. Dominic is in Rochester.
All right, Dominic.
Welcome, Dominic.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're okay. Thank you.
Yeah, health and family are doing well. Can't complain too much.
Of course, you know what state Rochester's in.
Yeah, we know. You're a Browns fan and a Yankees fan.
Before I get to the Yankees, let me just say this. As far as I call him Szymanski, if you remember, you know, just count how many times he uses the word better today, because it'll make you sick. I don't want to talk about Watson today because Watson stinks. It's that simple. The game is passed him by. Well, why do we keep talking about it? As far as the football game, I do want to say a word on, and I know refereeing, boo-hoo-hoo, I'm going to be a weenie-whiny, but offensive pass interference, I mean, really? You know, who the hell calls that in that situation? Come on, really?
That was rough. You're right, Dominic. That was rough.
They've been on us since we signed Watson and we monkeyed around with his contract the first year. The NFL's been on us. Anyway, on the baseball, you know, I'm usually with you guys every week. I mean, you know, and we're on the same page every week. But let me break the news to you guys. You are not going to beat the New York Yankees, period. You don't have the pitching to beat the New York Yankees. As a matter of fact,
seen that bullpen, Dominic?
Mm-hmm. The Yankees are going to probably celebrate on your field.
Have you seen that bullpen, Dominic?
Were you a part of the group of people who wanted to throw the third best player in baseball into the Hudson River?
Who's this?
That would be Aaron Judge.
No.
Because after listening to that whole group of people going, oh my God, Aaron Judge sucks. He's the worst.
No, I thought that there was something wrong with him in the beginning. No, I thought his foot was still in trouble at the beginning of the year. April was so bad, so very bad. But no, I don't do that. Aaron Boone. Aaron Judge is not my favorite player, but you know, I'm glad we've got him.
I'm thrilled you're not one of those, Dominic.
All right,
Dominic, keep calling, by the way, during the series.
I can respect you because that whole group of Yankee fans who were losing their mind, oh, Aaron Judge sucks in October. He's not an October baseball player. Like all that stuff. You people can all go kick rocks barefoot. just insufferable Yankee fans.
Greg is in Madison. Hello, Greg.
How are you, Greg?
Brett, close enough.
Brett, that sounds a lot like you, Greg. We get we get these young kids that just bash Bob Costas answering phones. I'm sorry, Brett.
Yeah, I'm good. Something I learned today is Deshaun's mom's name is Bev, because I don't know if she's watching the same game I am, if you guys are. It seems like he's running himself into sacks more than it's the line breaking down, even though they are pieced together. And he's missing people wide open. It's the quarterback. There's something wrong inside his head. He's broken. That's all there is to it. And I was so excited to get him because I'm thinking, hey, this is a good piece.
We saw him in Houston, Brett. He was pretty good. He was pretty good.
Yeah, he was putting up Hall of Fame numbers before he got here. And now, as we look at, Bo Nix has more 300-yard games than Deshaun has since he's joined the Browns. And it's saddening. It's heart-wrenching to see somebody that was doing so great become so average or even less than average. And the only reason why I'd even want to make a change is I want to see what we have in DTR. Jameis Winston is not the future of the Browns, okay? DTR, maybe. Let's see what we have in him. That's the only reason why I'd want to make a change, is that we can evaluate him in real games that really matter during the season instead of watching him in preseason.
Brett, thank you very much. The only way we're seeing DTR is if they absolutely just have no chance of making the playoffs. And nothing against DTR. I think he's an interesting young prospect. I don't know that he's your starting quarterback of the future. Just saying. Very few guys taken that late in the draft are. Yes, I know there are some, but I don't think he's...
If you're going in with the thought that DTR is going to be the one that's going to come in here and save this, then I hope you're right. I want you to be right, but boy, I'm not going to Vegas and betting on it.
Mark's in Euclid. Hello, Mark.
How are you, Mark?
Fellas, man, this just sounds so ridiculous, man. I understand the statement you're saying. We need, it ain't all Watson's fault. It's the whole team's fault. But I don't care what quarterback you put in there. If you got leading the league and drop passes, whatever quarterback you put in there, they're going to drop the passes. If your line is no good, whatever quarterback you got back there is going to get sacked.
Not necessarily true on that one, Mark.
Real quick, Mark, on that one. The only other thing that I would throw in, especially with the wide receiver drop passes, is the old Jay Cutler theory, where it's like your quarterback is just rifling it so darn hard that putting somebody in there with some touch might help it a little bit. Not that I'm saying Watson is rifling everything in there. It's just one of those thoughts. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, he goes 6 for 7 yesterday on a drive and get us down to the 3-yard line. And what happens? We get 2 offside penalties. That's nothing to do with him, fellas. I mean, he's going around the corner to get into the end zone, and number 70 don't even block. He missed the block, and his man tackling. I just can't see how another quarterback is going to change these kind of mistakes. I mean, you don't ever get down to the 3-yard line and get 2 offside penalties. That's on the offensive line. I mean, all right, I just
Mark,
don't agree
so,
with
Mark,
all that.
Stop. That I will agree with
Mark,
you.
Mark, stop. So what are you going to do? You're 1-5.
I don't think it's anything we can do truthfully, because I don't think another quarterback is going to get different results.
So what are you going to do?
I don't see him. Man, we're going to have to ride this one out. I mean, we need a new offensive line. But you change Jameis Winston in there. Interception prone, man. He's going to throw more picks than anybody. He might throw for 400 yards, but he's going to get 4 interceptions.
All right, Mark. Thank you very much.
Oof.
We're going to talk more Browns later on.
Oh.
The baseball team is playing for a trip to the World Series.
You're darn right they are.
Yeah, Bubba.
Let's go.
We go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. He's not allowed to be partial, even though he's from Cleveland. He's a columnist for MLB.com. I'll just leave it at that and not bring it up. He's our buddy. He's a native Northeast Ohioan. He's Anthony Castrovince. Hello, Anthony.
What's happening, Anthony?
Hello. You mean we're not going to talk about Deshaun Watson? We're going to talk about the guards? Let's do it.
You can call back in, 216-474-0092.
Well, yeah, get in line, and you can figure out who you want to blame.
Okay, let's get this out of the way. Oh, my God, what a fun season this has been. What a fun season. And I didn't, did you, think that this was remotely possible just at the beginning of this year?
Everything's possible. I thought it was possible within the division, but ALCS, no. I
am legitimately stunned that this team, you know, won a playoff series and is where it is right now. And it's just a credit to ultimately the bullpen and the management of the bullpen over the course of the year. You know, that's the number one thing. That's something that you just could not have forecast, because bullpens are notoriously difficult to forecast, even when it's known quantities back there. You know, you could bring back your entire bullpen from last year and have a completely different experience. And maybe that happens next year, but they had so many young guys step up in those, you know, high leverage relief roles that just completely swung the trajectory of the season.
It blew me away more than anything, Anthony, that here we are in a game five. Matt Boyd is rolling, gets you two innings, and then all of a sudden they go rookie, 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 all the way the rest of the way. Like, that to me is the most
Only two innings.
Yeah, after two innings. And then it's just a parade of rookies who proceed to mow down Tiger hitters. Like, that to me is the most unfathomable part.
Yeah. And for the record, I hated that. And, you know, it worked. It very easily could have not worked. You know, almost didn't work, but Lane Thomas kind of saved the day there. But, yeah, that was really teetering on the brink of overthinking it, you know, because – yeah, it's game five, all bets are off, all hands on deck, et cetera, but there was a real scenario where they run out of, you know, true relievers there. And, you know, next thing you know, it's Kevin Williams, you know, pitching in the 10th inning or something. So, yeah, I mean, it definitely ended up working to their advantage, but I won't say it on air, but that he took a risk. Let's just say that.
Yeah, ended up with 8 pitchers in that game. Anthony, from just judging from what you just said, you thought the same thing that I thought. When Eli Morgan, I'm thinking, Eli, get a couple of outs. Just get to 2 outs in the 8th inning. When he gave up a hit to the first batter and Steven goes out, and I said, man, if Class A doesn't have it, what's he going to do? And
I thought Eli Morgan just he was the unsung hero of the day.
He was, wasn't he?
Enormous. Yeah, definitely. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Go ahead with that thought because I thought when they brought Eli in, I thought, uh-oh, he's usually not pitched in situations like this.
Right.
Well, boy,
right.
Did he pitch well.
That was absolutely, absolutely monumental. And because he's a guy, I mean, you look, people who haven't followed this team all year will just kind of call up the numbers and say, oh, Eli Morgan, sub-2 ERA out of bullpen. But he wasn't in a lot of high leverage, you know, moments this year. That just wasn't his role. So, yeah, he showed some stones there as well.
Anthony Kastrovitz, MLB.com, joining on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. All right, Anthony, let's spin it forward. So the roster came out. The biggest, at least to me, the biggest addition to this is Pedro Avila being a part of it and Ben Lively not being on the roster. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I figured they'd go with a 13-man pitching staff with the longer round and, you know, fewer off days, et cetera. And Lively, I get that because, you know, they do have Gavin Williams. I would presume they have Joey Cantillo as well, but, you know, it's obvious one of those guys is going to start game four and or be their fourth starter, I should say. I don't know the exact order of things, but my only thought there is just, you know, Ben Lively obviously is a big reason why the Guardians won the division. There's no question about it. Was he over his skis a bit? Probably, you know, based on his history and just kind of, you know, when you dig down in the dirty metrics and, you know, hard hit percentage and, you know, whiff rates and chase rates and things like that, he probably got away with some things this year. And I think that caught up with him a bit in the second half a little bit. So there is that. And also just facing the Yankees, I mean, there is something to be said for having some more sizzle in your starting rotation, giving them different looks in that regard. Cause you're rolling out, you know, you got Alex Cobb in game one. I mean, they're not like, they're not hitting them with a ton of just raw stuff and velocity. So that'll be a different look in the rotation when that turn comes up versus Lively. So I think that's, I haven't talked to anybody about it yet, but that would strike me as the most logical thought process there.
Any chance you think he's out of gas?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not in his heart and head. I think he's still, you see him with the iPad and dugout, I think he's still bringing value of some sort to this squad, but you rely more on a longer term track record than what he gave them in the first half. What he gave them was fantastic, but I like the way they've done their playoff roster construction this year, which is to not, you know, not lean towards the guys who got you here necessarily, but lean towards the moment that we're in right now. You saw that with the composition of the bullpen, going into the division series where, they're riding the hot hands, as opposed to, keeping Nick Sandlin on the roster. You know, that's a hard thing to do. That's a hard conversation to have with someone who's got some tenure here and has been a big part of what they've done in the last few years. But, you know, at the end of the day, Eric Sobrowski, he came up here and the stuff sizzled and, you saw what he was able to do in a handful of innings and you roll with it into the postseason. I don't think that's the kind of move they make in the Terry Francona era, to be honest with you. So that's just one distinction you kind of draw from now versus the past. And that's not to diminish anything Tito accomplished here. That just struck me as something like, oh, okay. It's kind of a different feel to going into October where we're going to ride the hot hands more than, the known quantities.
Alex Cobb getting the game one start for the Guardians. What do you think of that?
It's pretty fascinating. We saw last night Kodai Senga made his third start of the season, and it was his second start of the postseason, and he was a disaster.
He got rocked. That,
but it just kind of speaks to where what we've seen in the game this year, where even the good teams are really scrambling to get meaningful innings from their starting staff. Been a lot of injuries and whatnot, and so now you have these unusual situations where Kodai Senga making his third start in LCS game one and Alex Cobb, I've kind of lost track of how many starts. I think it was like three in the regular season, one in the postseason. So his fifth start of the year is in LCS game one. It's just welcome to baseball in 2024, hang with it. I like Alex Cobb a lot and you gotta respect what he's given them when he has been able to take the ball. It's been pretty fascinating. Now, obviously it was very, in and out of game three of the division series against the Tigers. But, they really hope to get some length from him, I think, because you can't manage this series like you did the last series for a couple of reasons. One, it's a much different lineup you're facing. And two, you don't have this ridiculous number of off days in a short amount of time. So a seven-game series is a much bigger test.
What do you make of the fact that all four of these teams that are left basically each have one starter they feel good about and a whole lot of shakiness?
That's weird.
Yeah.
It's bizarre.
It's just the year we're in, it's sad because you've seen, pitchers are limited like never before in terms, everyone's careful about pitch counts and whatnot and how they bring these guys up and develop them, and they throw fewer innings than ever. And they throw harder than ever, and that's a big reason why the injury rate is where it is. You got bullpen arms are developed differently, and bullpens are deeper than they've ever been before. Guys who would have been clear closers a decade or two ago are now like six-inning guy. Or look at Cade Smith. He's a third-inning guy in Game 5 of the division series. He's pitched anywhere from the third through the sixth innings, I believe, in this postseason. I mean, Cade Smith could close for a lot of teams right now. But he's deployed much earlier for this Guardians team. That's the nature of baseball in 2024.
Anthony Castrovince joining us, MLB.com. Last thing, the Guardians go to the World Series if, and let's go deeper than outscore the Yankees four times,
which is very difficult to do. But if the bullpen's not gassed, it's just that simple. Like that's the great fear in this is it took so much. To get to this point, both in terms of winning the division and then overtaking the Tigers, it took Class A Smith, Heron, and Gattis all, throwing north of 70 appearances, and then multi-inning outings. Class A had to get six outs in the division series for the first time in his career to finish off Game 5. So, and then you got one day off in between, and then it's start right up again against one of the best lineups in baseball. So. It is that simple. If the bullpen performs like it's performed all year, they can absolutely beat the Yankees. The Yankees are absolutely pitchable. It's fascinating how different this series is than the one 2 years ago. And the Guardians pushed them to the brink 2 years ago with a much different pitching composition and less thump, and significantly less thump in the lineup. Now they have a little more thump in the lineup. It's still guards ball. It's still contact and speed. It's not, the 27 Yankees, that's for sure. But they do have more guys who could put the ball over the fence in big spots, as we saw with Thomas the other day. You know, that did not exist for them 2 years ago. So they have that going for them, and they've got a really good pitching plan. It's just, do these guys still have gas in the tank? That's all it's going to come down to.
I can't. You ready? Go ahead and slap me for this. I can't wait until this season is over and we start talking about what this team can do for next year, because I think there are fascinating moves on the horizon. So I need to back off and enjoy the moment, because this is going to be even more fun than it's been all season long. But man, they're in a position where next year this is going to be really interesting in the offseason. There's some moves that might make everybody mad, but here you are in the ALCS, and that was the whole goal. So it's been a lot of fun. Well, one of the steps along the way to the ultimate goal. How's that?
Absolutely. Yeah, and hopefully this leads to, you know, like we saw when they unexpectedly made the World Series.
Yeah.
In 2016, you know, they went out and invested in the offseason. And I still say that 2017 team, as bad as it turned out against the Yankees in the division series, I mean, that was the best team I've been around here in Cleveland. I would stack it up against, you know, some of those 90s teams. They were just that good. They were probably, I think, the best run differential in franchise history. So that's a long-winded way of saying, hopefully this leads to some investment. this unexpected run hopefully leads to good things in the future as well.
Awesome to have you with us. If you're bored later on in the series, because, you know, I'm sure you will be, we look forward to having you back with us. Thanks, Anthony.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good Anthony Castrovince, read him at MLB.com. He's a great columnist and really knows his stuff. And it's always a pleasure to have him with us right here on Baskin and Phelps. So 1 o'clock for the head coach of the Browns. We'll hear Kevin's press conference right here on 92.3 The Fan. Looking forward to that. Anytime anything gets delayed, especially something that's usually as regimented as his press conference on Monday, gives me a pause just a
questions.
Little bit.
Yeah. I mean, if there is one thing you can say about that guy, he's always on time. And when he's not on time, I have questions.
Yeah. I wonder what that's all about. Maybe nothing at all.
Yeah, hopefully everything's okay with family.
Maybe a big, I'm sure the family's fine, I'm guessing. I'm wondering if big conversation within the organization.
Yeah.
Or I'm wondering if maybe lunch wasn't ready on time.
Yeah.
So you never know, but we'll find out. 1 o'clock now for Kevin Stefanski, which gives us even more time to talk about the Guardians.
Could be anything from quarterback to, hey, I got to take my kid to half day kindergarten, you know.
Tonight you have Alex Cobb going up against his former Giants teammate, Carlos Rodon. Okay, either one. Anybody can get hot and go. That's terrific. You picked up Alex Cobb to pitch in games like this. He's going to pitch tonight. He went 3 innings in the ALDS. Dano, I would think, ideally, after using 8 pitchers in Game 5 to get past the Tigers, which, by the way, is still stunning to me that it worked. I say that only, I know how good the bullpen has been. The bullpen has been heavily used, and Matthew Boyd, though he had some traffic, went only 2 innings. I thought, wow, okay. You took him out before a second time through the lineup. I would think, ideally, if Stephen Vogt could say, I would like this out of Alex Cobb tonight, it would be 6 or 7 innings. Get me through the 6th and maybe into the 7th, or get me through the 6th. I'm going to push it past 5, because if he could rest that bullpen a little bit, it could set this team up for the rest of the series.
Well, let's lay down the groundwork. This series is going to be a little bit different than the previous series in that you're going to have less off days. And so the way that the guards did this, where they had these bullpen games, where they could just basically go, all right, one time through the lineup, and we could blow out the pen, because have an off day here, and we know we have an off day here, and we know we have an off day here. That's gone, because it's
Monday, Tuesday.
Yep, Monday, Tuesday in New York. You're off Wednesday.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
So that advantage of having all of those off days to rest those guys is a little bit out the window. So I think you might be onto something where you're looking at an Alex Cobb and going, okay,
if he gives up 2 or 3 runs through 4 innings, he might be out there for a 5th.
It's on the table if it's been like, hey, they got one hard hit ball off of them, and it's not a whole bunch of traffic and walks and all of that kind of stuff. Like, if it's just like one bomb that caused the situation. But, like, I am with you. They can't ride this pen, and it makes me wonder what the plan B is if, let's say, Alex Cobb comes out and doesn't look absolutely dominant. Do you Do you look
go
to split
Joey Cantillo and let him try and pitch three or four innings in relief?
Or do you look to split in New York? Do you look at game one and go, okay, let's unload the pen, let's get everybody out here, let's keep this thing as close as possible, and then game two, we'll hand the ball to Tanner Bibee and go, all right, bud, we need seven innings. Go get him, Tiger. Like, I partially wonder if that might be the thought process. If we go 1-1 in New York, we feel good coming back to Cleveland for three.
Home field advantage to me in baseball doesn't mean a hill of beans. So if you get a chance, and it's nice to play in front of your home crowd. I get that.
I understand.
I'd rather have good pitching than a good crowd.
Numbers would tell you the same thing. Yep.
Yeah. So I would think he's going to do, and he being Stephen Vogt, he's going to do what he's done all season, which is manage the bejeebers out of the game he's in and worry about the next day. And you know what? I don't have any issues with that. If he feels, and ideally, again, I want Cobb go, you know, six innings tonight, maybe more. That's unlikely. Let's go six. If he goes five, okay, and you can cut down on the bullpen usage, that's fine. If he goes two or three and you're in trouble, man, and you want to do what you did the other day, okay, great. Roll out all those relief pitchers. But that might mean in game two, you know, you go coming out of the pen with Cantillo, coming out of the pen with Gavin Williams, and ask those guys to
Pedro Avila.
Right, and ask those guys to go three, you know, to eat up some innings so that you're not dead meat when you get back to Cleveland and have to play three games in 3 days.
And especially with the workload that you've been putting on Class A is the other part. Okay, go. We need you for two innings here. We need you for an inning and a third here. We need, like, that's a guy that's not used to having that much of a workload. And granted, adrenaline does a hell of a thing. And, you know, it is the playoffs. And these guys train to throw 40, 50 pitches. You know, that way you got a great 20. In the same way that if you're an 100-meter sprinter, you train the 200 and you train the 400 so that your 100 is a little bit easier on you. So I get it from that perspective, but I don't think you are going to see the parade of relievers that you once did in this series.
Let me ask you this one. Pitching, we obviously think, is the key. I want to ask you about the position players on the roster because it's a little different than it was, and it might have been a little tight before. Guardians, game one tonight, ALCS, Guards, Yankees.
Let's go!
Alex Cobb. Alex, we hardly know you. But please come through for us on a huge stage.
I think he'll do well.
He's made, what, four starts for the Guardians this year.
I think he'll do well. He'll keep the ball down. He will definitely challenge Judge. He will challenge, you know, he'll challenge Soto. The big thing with them is, you know, it's Judge, it's Soto, and you have a hot Giancarlo Stanton right now. I mean, that makes that lineup oh so much longer when Giancarlo Stanton is at one of his peaks, and he's at one of his peaks now. So, it's going to be tough. Look, it's those damn Yankees, you know? They always seem to find their way.
You know?
And then they always seem to do their stupid Yankee pixie dust stuff and take a guy like Luke Weaver, who's been kicked around the league for 9 years, and all of a sudden he's an unhittable closer. Why? Because we're the Yankees. Ugh.
Weaver saved every game.
Sufferable.
Against Kansas City.
I know. And he was awful. Awful for an extended period of time. I mean, that guy got kicked around by, like, seriously, six or seven different teams, and all of a sudden he became a Yankee, and they sprinkled their magic pixie dust on him, and now he's good.
Let's go over the playoff roster here for the ALCS. We talked about the pitching staff. They added a pitcher, Pedro Avila, who was not on the ALDS roster, has been added. They have 13 pitchers on the roster, and they have 13 position players. So they took a position player off the roster, and that's Angel Martinez. So I think they're okay, but I think they're limited, Dano. And let me tell you why. You're going to play Josh Naylor. You're going to play Andrés Giménez, Brian Rocchio, Jose Ramirez, Bo Naylor. Okay, that's set. You're going to play Stephen Kwan. You're going to play Lane Thomas. You're set.
Yep.
That means everybody else, you have David Fry, who can DH for you.
Always seems to do the right thing at the right time.
David has been a godsend this year.
Really has?
He has.
That's
been
a great way to put it,
the
man.
The only issue, his elbow injury, he can't play anywhere.
Right.
He can DH. You have Austin Hedges, who can be a catcher for you and nothing else. He's not going to play any other position. So you have him coming off the bench and terrific defensive catcher, and maybe he gets a big hit once in a while, but obviously he's not a terrific offensive player. You have Kyle Manzardo, who can't play anywhere for you but first base. You're not going to play him in a playoff series in the outfield.
I mean, this is the organization, and it was Terry Francona as well, but this is the organization that took Carlos Santana and put him in the outfield in the World Series.
You're not going to play Kyle Manzardo in the outfield in a playoff series.
I think it's on the table.
You're not going to play Kyle Manzardo in the, if I say it often enough, I'll talk it into being, you're not going to play Kyle Manzardo in the outfield in a playoff series.
I think it's on the table.
Quiet.
It's on the table.
Quiet. You also then have Daniel Schneeman. Daniel is, hey, this guy went down. Anywhere but catcher. Go play it.
In case of emergency, break glass. That's the best way to put him.
Anywhere we need you, Daniel, go. And if we're getting rocked, you might pitch.
Hopefully it doesn't come to that. If it comes to that, we've got a lot of other problems on our hands.
I just don't think they have a ton of versatility, position player-wise, on the bench. I also don't know that they'll need it.
No.
You know what I mean? Because, I mean, think of it. Fry can't play a position right now.
Maybe first. Maybe. That would be the only one.
Okay, fine. Manzardo, I only want at first. So that's two first basemen. That's it. Schneeman can play anywhere. And you have Noel and you have Brennan, who will probably platoon in the outfield. Man, that doesn't give you a whole lot. That's counting on Schneeman playing second if needed, short if needed, third if needed, outfield if needed.
Do you take anything, and I ask you, you've done this many more time than I have, do you take anything from the fact that David Fry is listed as a backup catcher on that roster?
No.
Okay.
No. And I think that's interesting, too.
I thought that was fascinating.
If David were healthy, if his elbow were okay, boy, it gives you a lot more flexibility. David came up as a shortstop. You know, I don't know if anybody even remembers that now. But when he was in college, he was early on a shortstop, infielder, catcher, outfield. I mean, he can play anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd rather have him with the ability to play anywhere than Daniel Schneeman. And Daniel's done a nice job this year. It's nothing against him. But David obviously has more pop. But right now, with David's injury to his arm, he can't throw, which means he can't play.
Right. I think first base is a stretch. Yeah. You got to be a serious problem.
Especially when you actually have three other guys that you can play at first base.
Right.
You have Naylor, you have Manzardo, and Jonkenzie Noel can play some first base if needed.
Yeah. Yeah, they did have that during the season a little bit. So
you could have that. But anywhere else, I think you just better make sure everybody else stays healthy. You could replace somebody, obviously, if they have a serious injury.
Right, you got Angel Martinez that you can look to.
And he's with the team, you know, so he's not on the roster, but hopefully you don't have to replace anybody. You're locked in with Kwan in left.
Beautiful.
And with Lane Thomas in center field.
It's an adventure, but it's there.
Well, and that's okay. Wouldn't, for instance, forgive me, I don't want to make any Terry Francona people mad. Lane Thomas was playing center field in a game 5. And if you didn't win it, you go home. Who do you think was playing center field in that game last year?
Miles Straw. All day, every day would have been Miles Straw.
If Terry Francona were managing this year, who would have been playing center field?
Miles Straw.
Probably so.
Yeah.
Instead, it was Lane Thomas, and boom, he has the hit of the season.
He does. He has the hit of the season. He did misplay a ball out there.
So what? I've told you this before. I live by this. I have a buddy who played college baseball in the Big Ten, and he gave me a line that cracked me up. He said, I wasn't real crazy about my coach in college. He said, I didn't think he was very good. But he had a line that has stuck with me forever. He said, you're not very good with a glove, huh? You're going to let in one run every game, but you're going to hit in two? Go to left field, son. You're in the lineup.
It's the old Manny Ramirez theory. So that was Manny Ramirez to a T. He's like, well, we can't play David Ortiz anywhere. So, yeah, go make a mess of left field.
Serious. You know what I mean? So if you let in one but yep. hit in two, that's a plus one.
Sounds like my golf game.
And I that's what I think about Lane Thomas. Great. And if you have to, okay, what are you going to do there? You could play Will Brennan in center. You could play Stephen Kwan in center. And you certainly could play Daniel Schneeman in center field.
Make it work. Yep.
Because, you know, Daniel has that center field pedigree as a former infielder.
On this team, get out there, son. You've had some reps.
Oh, God. Jonah is in Canton. Jonah.
How are you, Jonah?
Hey, how we doing, fellas?
We're good.
Great. Hey, go guard. Screw the Yankees. It's our time. Let's go. Lock in. Hey. Just coming on here, been really proud of the guards. Been a heck of a season to watch. If nothing comes out of it, still been fun. But, hey, we're looking for that World Series right now. Wanted to ask a couple questions. You know, just thinking about Vogt, what has he meant to the city of Cleveland? I'm thinking about end of the season. We bring Manzardo up. Manzardo hits that game-winning homer and tears in the press conference. Like, you just tell this guy loves the team. He cares about the guys. It's special to watch. What does he mean to the city of Cleveland, and what could a World Series mean to the MLB? You know, Yankees being a big market team. Heck, we come across the Dodgers in the series; they're a big market team, and you know we're closer to a smaller market. And what does that mean for the? Does it mean anything, or does it mean something big for the MLB?
Love Jonah, it hammers home parity. I mean, that's really what it does. Is it hammers home that everybody every season has a shot. And it means that you don't need to go out there and get your, you know, and get a Shohei Ohtani, and you can win without having Aaron Judge on your roster or signing a Juan Soto and all that stuff. While I'll be the first to tell you, winning is easier when those guys are on your rosters. It's not a hands down requirement to do it if you have the other things that make it work.
Jim is in Strongsville. Jim.
What's happening, Jim?
First off, I have full confidence and trust in any major leaguer that sports the mustache.
That's a really good point.
Let's start with that. Secondly, you guys had, I'm going to call him Jude Law. I know it's not who he was, but you had him on midseason talking about, well, the Guardians just good because they're in the weak Central. And now you hear these guys on the postgame show, oh, the Yankees definitely have the easiest bet. The Central was probably the best division in baseball this year. The best division in baseball. They got three teams to the divisional series. What more does this division have to do for these guys, Pedro and all these guys, to be standing up there basically sticking their noses up at the Central? It's so infuriating because it's not like what Baltimore stunk at the end by the end of the year. The Astros, yes, they had the pedigree, but they were listless by the end of the year. So I just don't understand. I mean, that to me, why I want to go punch the Yankees in the face is because I'm so tired of hearing about how bad the Central is. Finally, it's not a bad division, and nobody seems to want to come around to that. It's very frustrating. I would love to see them beat the Yankees and then beat the Dodgers. And you know what? LA and New York fall off a cliff.
There you go, Jim. Thank you very much.
I'm not that far. It's, you know, hey, a lot of
Tigers,
good people.
Tigers are going to be good for a while.
Heck yeah.
They've got a nice
Royals
young team.
Royals are pointing straight up,
Royals
too.
Are looking really good.
So Twins aren't going to go anywhere. They're
Twins aren't
get,
going anywhere. And the White Sox stink. Kevin Stefanski's press conference coming up, right?
Oh, as long as Jerry Reinsdorf owns that team's not going anywhere. I'm sending up the caution flag.
Okay.
Something smells funny.
That's what I'm saying.
Something smells funny.
That's what I'm saying.
And by that, I mean, so...
like big conversation between the powers that be.
We're all very trained, right? It's very simple to be trained. It's very simple for all of us to become somewhat Pavlovian. You know, ring the bell, all of a sudden the dog salivates because he thinks he's getting fed, right?
Coach, press conference gets delayed.
It sets off an alarm bell. We're Pavlovian. At 12:30 on a Monday, Kevin Stefanski speaks via Zoom. The one thing we know about Kevin Stefanski is the man's never late. The man is never late. It's one of the best things about him when it comes to media relations. If Kevin Stefanski is going to do his Wednesday press conference, it will be at 12 p.m. And he will start at 12 p.m. or at the latest, like 12:02. That's the best part of that, dude. When all of a sudden things start getting a little wonky, I start asking questions because that guy is as prompt as it gets. Something smells funny, man. That's all I'm saying. I don't know if it's what you're saying. I don't know if it's any of that, but something smells funny.
What am I saying? I said it during the break, not over the air.
I thought you hinted there was a powers that be conversation.
Maybe the powers that be are having a conversation.
You said that on the air. We can check the tape.
Before they send Kevin out to meet with the media, maybe they're having a conversation about who's going to play quarterback moving forward. I would not think you're having any conversation about who's calling plays or who the offensive coordinator is right now or who the head coach is right now. I would think the conversation that might be being had is about who the head coach or who the quarterback is.
Something smells funny. That's all I'm saying.
I would agree with that. I would agree. 216-474-0092. We're going to take some calls. If we have to cut you off, it's only because Kevin has gone to the podium or someone else. Henry's in Akron. Hello, Henry.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I called in 7 months ago and I said, the Deshaun Watson deal was the worst deal that ever was made. I hear it on the news. They saying this deal destroyed this organization. So my question to who's ever listening is someone need to be held accountable. They need to put a face to that decision because this team is not going to recover. It's going to take a while before we ever see the Browns in the playoffs because of that one bad decision.
Saw them in the playoffs last year, Henry.
Huh?
They made the playoffs after that decision last year.
Well, luck is luck. Why is it they not making the playoffs this year? Come on, man. I mean,
luck is bad.
I mean, they had a world-class defense last year that was unbelievable.
It was really good.
And it basically carried this offense until Joe Flacco showed up.
And a very hot quarterback after that.
And he caught fire, and it just all worked out. But there was, is it 6 weeks, 8 weeks, somewhere in between there, where it was P.J. Walker and DTR, and this offense was horrid. And right now, you don't have an all-world defense, Henry.
Well, guess what? That same defense is out there now. Where's that all-world defense at now? That's my point. That's
what we're saying. We agree with you. We agree with you. It's been okay, but unfortunately, it looks like this team is built that if it has to compete and if it needs to compete, if it's going to compete, it's going to have an A-plus defense, Henry, and that's not there right now.
You're right. So what do we do from here? Because
there you go.
We could light candles. We could pray to any deity we can think of.
All right, let's not be smart. We've never been accused of being smart.
Usually it's followed by a word that is also used to describe a donkey.
Yeah. Unfortunately for Jim Schwartz and the defense has to be better. You know, they gave up 20 points yesterday to a Philadelphia team that had been struggling a little bit. But that's 20 points. That's nothing. In the NFL, that should win you most games. You should win most games.
Yeah.
And that's not possible right now. They're going to have – our team hasn't scored more than 18 in a game. So it tells you what the defense has to be right now. Clearly, we know it's no surprise. I mean, it's almost foolish to sit here and say the offense needs to be better. We just have to further that. How do you make this offense better? And that's what they better figure out, and they better figure out fast.
And that's the thing is looking – does Jim Schwartz's defense need to be better? Yes. But does looking at Jim Schwartz's defense and saying you need to be one of the four best defenses, five best defenses in the NFL this season for us to be successful, that is a bar that is really, really hard to clear, especially when you were either one or two, depending on your personal preference of the Baltimore Ravens last year. That is a serious over-the-top ask.
Nate is in West Salem. Hello, Nate.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Jeff, earlier when we were talking about Deshaun's, you said that, yes, you have to pay him, but you don't have to play him. And so that's implying putting him as backup. My question to you, and I don't know the rules on this, are we able to drop him to the practice squad and bring DTR up as well?
Nate, as far as I know, and I'll readily admit, I'm not 100% sure on this. I think you can put him on the practice squad. I think
well,
you can.
That's what I would do.
Well, yes, you could, I believe. Now, he would have to clear waivers I guess he would. He'd have to clear waivers, which he would.
He'll clear waivers.
and then anybody could claim him off the practice squad, which no one will, which no one will.
But you still got to pay him.
But you still have to pay him.
Oh, you know, paying him is, you know, we all know that. We can't take the cap hit. That's, but do we have to even make him the backup? If we don't, drop him to the practice squad, bring DTR up, and really, quite honestly, I'd rather just let DTR finish out the season, see what we got in DTR, and, you know, have some fun again. He's an exciting player. Make some changes to the offensive line, you know, get Nick back and, you know, keep the defense. You know, one of the reasons why the defense isn't doing too well is because they're on the field too much. Too many three and outs. They're just getting burned out. So,
that's,
all right, well.
That's a good point, Nate.
Valid point.
That's a really good point.
Yep, that's a valid point.
I mean, it's when your offense is that bad on third down, I mean, good golly, it tells you all you need to know. I mean, you were, what was it, 0 for 22 until the fourth quarter? Wasn't it something like that?
0 for 26.
0 for 26th.
And they've gone, what, 29 possessions and scored one touchdown?
You're the only team in the league who hasn't scored more than 20 points or had a quarterback throw for over 200 yards.
I mean, and you're the only team in the league in like 10 years that hasn't scored at least 20 points in one of your first six games. That's not good. Melissa is in Hiram, home of the Terriers.
How are you, Melissa?
Melissa's eating lunch. Melissa, what are you having? Is that a sandwich? Is that soup?
It's got to be something crunchy. I'm thinking a potato chip.
You think it's chips?
Maybe a carrot, unless you want to go healthy. It's got a crunch to it.
Might
celery?
Be celery. Celery would be crunchier.
That would be crunchier.
Melissa, pleasure listening to you eat lunch. I'm putting you on hold.
Enjoy
just for
it.
Fun.
I hope you enjoy your lunch.
Isaac is in Shaker Heights.
Isaac, damn it, Isaac.
Please don't eat, Isaac.
Hey, how you doing?
We're hanging in, man.
That's great. I'm sorry. Hey, I'm doing pretty good. I'm totally disagreeing with everybody calling in blaming this thing on Watson. First and foremost, man, everybody knows that the guy just stated, I mean, the offense is suck. The play calling, everything starts on the offensive line. Joe Montana, any of you Hall of Fame quarterback you name, couldn't quarterback this offense. You got guys that don't execute. You got wide receivers that don't catch the ball. You got wide receivers that can't get open and wide receivers that don't even try to get open. That last play with David Njoku, the guy moved so slow, man, I could have checked him. He didn't even try to screen the guy off. He didn't try to do anything. They just don't execute. Stop blaming it on Watson. Another thing, everybody wants another quarterback in. Jameis Winston can't move. You really want to put Jameis Winston in or even DTR?
Here's the problem. Okay, all right, Isaac. Hang on for one quick sec.
Okay.
I'm doing it because it's the only lever I can pull. That's the reason why I'm saying I want Jameis, because I don't have any other lever I can pull right now, and I got to pull a lever. You know what I mean?
Okay, now answer me this, then. Okay. And now that I know you got other callers.
No, you're good, dude.
We do, Isaac, but you're enchanting.
Yeah, but answer me this.
Of course.
You want Winston escapability, I don't know if that a word, his ability to move around in the pocket to try to get away from this rush that comes at Watson. He can't even do a three-step drop. And you want Jameis Winston?
Okay,
Winston can't move.
And guess what? He might be able to get rid of the ball in under 3 seconds.
I've watched Jameis
because the receivers. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. You're good, dude. I've watched Jameis in the Sean Payton offense where it was all built around that idea of if I got three steps and the ball's got to come out on time and on target. I've seen him execute an offense like that makes me think he could do it. But you're right. I wish there was more mobility to it. You're 100%
right. What offense? But then here's the other question. So you're trying to change an offense to a three-step drop now?
Man, and I'm trying anything.
Let me ask you. I'm going to give you opportunity. Well, you're giving me the opportunity. I'm sorry. But let me ask the question.
Dude, it's good. We're having a discussion. Life is good. No, there's no volatility
or evil. You're telling me that Jameis Winston is going to get the ball. So why can't Watson do a three-step drop? Either he can't process his reads correctly, then we got a problem. Then we definitely got a problem.
Uh-huh. Isaac, thank you.
I think you hit on something at the tail end of that phone call. That might be the answer to your question.
That might be something, huh?
Along with, right now, everybody is at fault. 11 guys are at fault. The main thing that I can do is there are two levers I can yank, because I can't bench five offensive linemen. I can't bench every wide receiver, okay? I got two levers. The first lever is to move on from a play caller. The second lever is the quarterback. Still waiting.
So stay tuned. We expect Kevin to be speaking momentarily in Berea after the Browns dropped to 1-5 yesterday, a 20-16 loss to the Philadelphia Eagles. I say that's a game they could have won. I say that the Vegas game was a game they could have won, also a 20-16 score. I say the Giants game is a game they could have won, a 21-15 score. So in the last four games, you've had three losses of 6 points or fewer. And obviously they're not playing very well, especially as an offense. And 1-5, just do the math as I did. Don't yell at me. It's only numbers. Don't yell at me. It's only numbers. I'm not saying they're going to go 8-3 the rest of the way. But if they can win eight games, they're 9-8. And some 9-8 team just might make the playoffs this year. I'm only doing math. I'm not stating what I think. I'm only doing math. You win 8 of the final 11 games, you still have playoff aspirations. Do not yell at me. I'm only giving you numbers.
All right, so if that's the case, if a train leaves L.A.
You want to know what I think?
At 11:35, right? And then another train leaves from Boston at, we'll say, 10:35. We're
depends.
Just doing math.
Is the train going through the Rockies? Because that might be some uphill stuff.
If we're just doing math. Well, in time zones, you got to win time zones.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Which direction the wind's blowing?
Yes.
Those were the worst. I hated those word problems. God, that was the, when a train leaves Boston, and you're like, oh God, just stop.
Which explains why we're working in broadcasting.
Uh-huh. I'm better off if you were like, a running back clears the line at this speed. How quickly could he get into the end zone? I'm better at that.
Kevin's press conference coming up, we think, momentarily. So we're going to let you have some thoughts here.
Well, yeah, we'll
Browns
keep you up to
therapy
date
Monday
on anything.
When Dan jumps in real excitedly and speaks way too loud and way too fast, we'll be going to Berea. In the meantime, Taven is in Cleveland.
If you weren't so damn honest, I'd be offended.
Hello, Taven.
Hey, how you doing?
We're doing well.
We're trying to figure out why Kevin's 55 minutes late, Taven.
Oh, he's probably still having a drink. You know how y'all be pouring that beer early in the morning? He's probably pouring in some beer.
Oh, man. I mean, I guess is a bank holiday for a chunk of people. So
I guess.
You could.
All I really had to say is I think they should take the playbook out to Fancy Hand. I think he should not be calling the play.
Who do you want, Dorsey?
That's what you got the offensive coordinator for. Let him call a play.
It's an option.
It was first and goal, and you didn't get nowhere. Second and goal, third and goal, and then fourth and goal, you don't go for it. You kick a field goal. We needed a touchdown. So once you made the field goal, guess what? We still need a touchdown to win the game. So why did you kick a field goal? We still was down by
that's
four.
I had that same question when it took place.
Taven, that's a valid question.
Yeah. That was stupid as hell.
It felt like the white flag after the two penalties.
You were banking on your defense being able to stop Philadelphia and get you the ball back, and then you win the game. That's what they were banking on.
If you don't score the touchdown, they down there on the 12-yard line, and you still bank on your defense to get you the ball back.
Taven?
That's a really good point.
You need a touchdown.
Either way, you had to get the ball back and get a touchdown.
Right.
If you didn't convert.
You would have got lucky and threw one in the end zone, the touchdown. But if you didn't, they down there on the 12-yard line, and you put your defense in.
Yep.
You kick the field goal.
That's a real valid point.
And they ran it all the way to the 35.
If you take a play from the 13-yard line, it actually might give you more room than if you're, from the 8, right? So maybe you could have run something different. I don't know. That's truly a real valid question.
It's a really good question.
From the 13-yard line, you run a pass play, you get a touchdown, mm-hmm. right? That's Lewis is in Shaker. Hello, Lewis.
How are you, Lewis?
What was the formula for that? I used to hate those word problems. What was it? Distance equal time over speed?
Oh, God, they were the worst. And then I had one teacher who was like, you could put that on a note card, and I'd never write the damn formula right on the note card, so I was SOL before the test even started. It was the worst.
I could not stand that mess in high school. I'd be like,
four.
I don't know.
And then, and you just guess some number and be like, all right, I'll take the L on that problem, and let's just hope I can get the rest of them.
All right. I have a question.
Yep.
Do we still lead the league in sacks?
Sacks allowed?
Yeah, that's allowed, yes.
It's a good question. Let me look it up.
We'll Google. You get to your next point.
Go ahead.
So where's the problem? If we do, where's the problem? It's in the offensive line.
Except for one thing. You have a quarterback with a history of getting sacked. Even when he was playing well in Houston, man, he was getting sacked all the time. Deshaun has been sacked more than any quarterback in the league, and it's not even close. Deshaun, 31 times. Caleb Williams has been sacked 20.
That's a mighty fine Googler.
Thanks.
Okay, two things. Number one, he needs to sit in the pocket and stop trying to scramble. That's number one.
I would agree with that.
Number two, this goes deeper. If the defense knows that the offense cannot score, it's psychologically upsetting to them, because if you continuously go, I was just saying this as an example, you go 3, 4, 5 and out, and the defense is right back on the field, pretty soon there's going to be mumbling and grumbling, especially amongst the defensive players. Now they're not going to come out and say it. Now, the high school kids, junior high school kids, they'll be like, well, why should we play? Why should we play defense because the offense can't score? I'm telling you, this is what's going on right now. The defense knows the offense cannot score, and it's distension amongst the team. They need to straighten this out and get it straightened out quickly. To me, the season is done. It's over with. But I'm telling you, that's the problem.
All right, Lewis. Thank you very much. If you're a defensive player and you had a pretty good unit last year and your unit's not bad this year, it's just not great, I would think you're pretty upset. You hold an adequate team in Philadelphia to 20 points. You hold the Giants to 21. You hold Vegas to 20, and you don't have a chance to win those games? I mean, the defense has had two clunkers, Washington, Dallas, where they gave up 33 and 34. And obviously not all of that's on the defense. Some of it's on the offense, not being able to do anything. But other than that, you've held teams to 21 or fewer points in 4 or 6 games.